name is Ashley, and this is Let's Talk Dispatch.
I do. You're gonna do it. Do it really well.
And I believe the world needs more dispatchers.
In the mud, blood,
plus
beer.
Years that I'm not working 4th of July.
Hey, community policing, right? What about community dispatching?
So on this show, with the help of my guests, we will educate, empower, and support the heroes behind the headset. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode here of Let's Talk Dispatch with me, Ashley, the Raspy Dispatcher. Thank you all so much for the continued love and support with this platform, this podcast. If you are listening and it's your first time, make sure to hit that subscribe button. Leave a 5-star review. And of course, if you want to join me on the show, you can head to theraspydispatcher.com. There's a few ways you can participate. One, by being a guest, and you just pick a date and time that works for you. We come on here and we chat. It's super low key, super chill, I promise. The second way is you can submit your story, good, bad, hilarious, anywhere in between, on my website as well, or by sending me an email, ashley@theraspydispatcher.com. A couple ways for folks to share their story, their experiences in this line of work as a 911 dispatcher. So for today, my guest, she is a dispatcher, trainer, peer support advocate, and recently celebrating her 4th year as a dispatcher in the state of Maine. She is also an Army vet, ambassador for Operation Enduring Warrior, and it's a veteran-founded nonprofit. And she is also 2023 Miss Pine Tree State Military Star title holder. And she is using her pageantry to advocate peer support and mental health treatment access for first responders and veterans as well, which is amazing. So today we're going to chat with her about her journey and the importance of peer support in the dispatch world, first responders, veterans, and especially going to focus and talk about how to start a peer support team within your agency if you currently do not already have one, which it is super important to have at the disposal of all those who are dealing with these 911 calls for service. So today, my guest, Cindy. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Ashley?
I am good. I know we were talking a little bit offline. You're just getting back from Disney World. Yes. Having the happiest place on earth, as they say.
Yes.
That's awesome. I was telling you, I was like, I really need to get back out there because I've gone to Disneyland a bunch of times because I'm in the Bay Area, but I haven't been back to Disney World since I was a kid. And I remember my parents telling me that my brother and I hated Disney World. We thought it was boring, and we just wanted to go back to Universal Studios. Talk about, like, oh, that's just problems we have here as youth. And, oh, you hate Disney World, huh? I guess. Oh, man. So tell me a little bit about yourself, how you got into public safety and your journey there.
So how I got started actually is a kind of funny, dark joke with my dad. So both my parents were career firefighters. Mm-hmm. My dad was a fire captain at one of the local, the next town over's fire department for 28 years. He was there for career, leaving as a captain after he tore out his rotator cuff and could no longer serve. So I came home from the Army. I have my degree in paralegalism. So I was applying to paralegal jobs here in Maine, and I just couldn't find one. And I came downstairs after spending hours on Indeed and, you know, all the job search, career.com, everything I could find. And I was just frustrated. I'm like, I give up. I'm just going to go work the corner. I'm like, that's it. I'm done. And he goes, well, dispatch is hiring. Why don't you go join the dark side with them? And I'm like, because he always complained about, you know, firefighters, fire captains, just like the police officers, they complain about different dispatchers. Definitely. So he's like, just go. Like, even if it's just for the time you're in training for 6 months to a year, mm-hmm. like, it's a union job, it has benefits, it's going to take care of you until you find something that you want to do. Mm-hmm. And so I turned in my application that night, and 4 years later, I'm still in this very, I like to say it's the best joke that I've ever had between me and my dad.
I love that. And it is so funny because I think anyone who goes and gets any type of degree And then they get out into the world and they're like, what the heck is going on? I can't find anything in my course of study. And we kind of just land where we need to land, right?
The even funnier part was like, what, the day I had my oral board with the fire chief, police chief, and the town manager for dispatch, I also had I left an interview at for our state, working for our state's mm-hmm. Department of Justice mm-hmm. as a paralegal. And they were like, oh yeah, you'll start out at GS-1. And I'm like, okay, so what's that pay step? They're like, $15 an hour. I'm like, you expect me to drive 45 minutes each way, pay taxes, pay parking for $14 an hour, where, you know, the dispatch job was at that point was only $18.25, but it was 2 miles down the road from my house and I had free parking.
Heck yeah.
And I was like, easy decision there. And then, of course, with
free parking, you know.
Oh, yeah. I was like, save on gas and free parking. Like, even if they were paying the same, I'd probably choose dispatch.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny, like, you know, because I live in a city and now I work in kind of a downtown area where our station is small and within that downtown area. So the parking is like, it's the fight of the century, like having to go to work, having to park down the street in a garage or, you know, swing in and try to grab a street parking. Like, parking's legit a thing to think about when you're applying places. I haven't thought about it until now, but that is my experience as well as with my new department, is the lack of parking available.
The new department that I've been working for the last year, as of today, actually, I have to fight with the officers for the behind the PD parking. Otherwise, I have to park with the public. So we have what's called Wacky Wednesday, where shifts are overlapping. So we have more officers than anything. So I have to get there like an hour early before their shift change if I want parking out back and not out with the public. And I'm like, yo, guys, you got to leave me a spot, please.
They're like lifting up your windshield wipers and like.
See, our town hall, like. They do that. Like, if I'm parked out back, we'll clean each other's cars off during snowstorms because we live in the great white north and all of that. Like, we take care of each other. But if I'm parked out front, people forget about my car. And after a 12 or 16 hour shift, it's covered in snow. And I'm like, someone should have done that. I couldn't leave.
Two MDT, all I need, all available units to come scrape my car off.
Please.
So yeah. What was it like for you in the beginning? When getting into dispatch, you know, your dad's like the dark side, and like now you're in it. You're one of us. Like, how was that experience for you?
It definitely was an experience, to say. When I joined my department, my first agency, they were completely understaffed. Just like, I mean, we all are. There was one point where, so our staffing levels there were supposed to be 5 during day shift, 5 certified. And 4 during the night shift. And we were working so understaffed that we were at 3 certified dispatchers and me as a 2-month trainee that had just come back from the academy. So I'm certified, but I had like very little desk training. And they're like, so it's like 3.5 dispatchers. I was certified by the state to do this job, but I had never really done it. Yeah. And they threw me on a desk and they were like, try not to ask stupid questions. We're here if you need you, but don't kill anyone. We'll see you at the end of the day. And they threw me on the like statistically lower call taking desk because we are a vertical center, not a horizontal center. So we dispatch and call take at the same time.
Oh, okay.
But we had six police agencies and 13 fire rescue agencies we dispatched for.
That's wild.
So they threw me on the Kennebunk Police Department desk.
Okay.
Which was also the Metro Teletype desk. An NCIC desk. So not a lot of stuff going on, especially since that is our affluent community we dispatched for.
Okay.
Like, that community alone probably had maybe a 1/6 of our call volume versus our big city we dispatched for took over half our call volume.
Yeah.
So they were like, she's good. She doesn't have to talk on the radio too much, but she will get experience. Yeah. Now, like, even before I left, my trainer, me and her had conversations. And apparently there was a lot of people betting against me during that 6 months of training because of being – I was thrown to the wolves.
Yeah.
I came back leading the pack after I came home and cried a couple times.
Oh, for sure.
And I was very lucky to have parents that were first responders. So when I came home and I cried and I said, this happened today, like I kind of had my own little mini peer support group without knowing what peer support was.
Yeah. Before we continue, we wanted to take a moment to thank our partners at Prepared. You can learn more about the awesome support and technology Prepared provides to first responders by heading to prepared911.com. Partners like Prepared help to continue our mission of supporting, empowering, and educating the heroes under the headset. You can learn more about our resources and partnerships by heading to theraspydispatcher.com. Now let's get back to the show.
But like I said, it was just, I was thrown to the wolves. Like a lot of the stuff I learned on my own, or I learned through podcasts or watching YouTube videos. Some of yours, the Raspy Dispatchers, are what taught, like, I was like, I need to learn more, but I'm not learning it at work. Mm-hmm. And so I like logged into that stuff and I used it as my own tools. Some people laugh when like, there's a calming technique I learned by watching the show 911 on Amazon. Like they're like, how'd you do that? And I was like, I saw it on 911. And I'm like, it worked.
Yeah.
I was like, I know it came from a show, but it worked.
Yeah. You know, we get tools and inspirations from all over the place, right? I mean, I was just on a little interview yesterday and I said, my fiance said something like, I like to tell people, I know you're doing your best. And I was like, ooh, I like that phrase. I think I could use that in the midst of a crisis when they're not answering my questions and I can just kind of split them with, I know you're doing your best, pause, but like, can you answer this for me? You know, like,
yeah.
So it is interesting, like the way we learn and hear things and kind of adapt it to our work environment, even from a show like 911. Because it's not always realistic, but they do have to do a little bit of research in order to make it kind of look relatable. And like, we know like the Halle Berry movie and like all these things, like at the end of the day, it's for entertainment. They're not trying to actually save citizens. And, you know, so we got to give a little grace there, but I definitely think we get a lot of inspiration from random places in order to do this job.
Well, one of them, I don't even know where my coworker got it. And I've picked up on it on, you know, those level 5 hysteria callers that are not listening to you. Mm-hmm. Instead of calling them sir or ma'am, or even trying to figure out their name, she just calls, like if it's a woman, she calls him mom. And if it's a man, she calls him dad.
Interesting.
Because that flips their brain, especially if they are a mom and dad going,
huh.
So what? Huh?
Yeah. Huh.
I was like, so I've done that a couple times.
Yeah.
And it really does. They go from crying to, what? What did you say?
Yeah.
Okay. My name's Cindy. What's your name? Okay, Linda. Let's work through this together. Their help is on the way. Like, but as soon as I said mom, that woman like, boom, stopped.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm like,
tricks of the trade, I tell you. Tricks of the trade.
You know, and it's not rude or anything. It's not. Some coworkers purposely, they even if they know the caller's name, they'll call them a wrong name, and because then callers will be like, well, that's not my name.
Yeah, yeah. And but sometimes you do have to do things like that to get people to hard stop, you know, like they're escalating, they're not hearing you, and you obviously have to do things respectfully because we are dealing with folks in crisis, you know.
Yeah.
To some level, it's a crisis for them. And you got to get them to connect with you. And it does take some bobbing and weaving sometimes. Yes. It's a dance for sure, especially with really escalated callers.
Yeah.
But I did want to touch back on your first experience training, because I do think that this is a reality for folks in the dispatch world. And if you are considering getting into dispatch, and hopefully you are because we need dispatchers, that to be aware and ask these questions during your interview process of what training does look like in the center. Because I think in a perfect world, every dispatch center wants to put folks through educational-based academy where they're not in front of a computer and they're learning the things. And then step them in front of the computer and then, you know, gracefully we get people step by step into the field. But then there's a lot of folks who are short staffed. Are like, all right, we're in it. Here's your seat. Here's your headset. Go, you know? So how was adjusting to that training? Did you know that was going to be what it looked like after you got certified? Or was it kind of one of those, all right, I'm here day one. Oh, crap. We're rolling, you know?
It was a shock to the system because I was like shadowing a trainer for the first like 2 or 3 weeks. Then they sent me to the academy. So I wasn't foreign to what they're talking about. Like I've seen it. I've been in the dispatch center. I've pulled shift, but I, you know, the most I ever did was answer the radio, go 10-4. Like, you know, copy that, you know, and I typed in the CAD a little bit. They let me play in the CAD. In a training section, not the live section. So I did have a little bit of, well, this is what it looks like. But there was 5 dispatchers in there, plus me behind the dispatcher working, who would be like, okay, you can tell him 10-4. Or, okay, tell them, okay, tell that fire.
Like, okay, go now. Go now. And you're like, okay, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah. I was like,
10-4. Okay, bye.
Can I answer him? I was having so much fun. I was like, I want to sit forward and I want to talk to these guys.
Yeah.
But then I left and then I came back and they're like, well, now you're certified. So you get to sit forward. And that's when I didn't have, like, I was expecting like just the roles to switch of, okay, my trainer's now behind me. And, but no, my trainer was on a whole separate desk dealing. And she was on that first day that I really remember. She was actually on the county sheriff's department's desk. So she's
busy.
She's busy. She's dealing with the wild, wild west of our county. And I love our deputies, and I know a couple of them personally, actually, because we served in the Army together.
Awesome.
But so I love the guys as guys.
Yeah.
But you ever sit me down there, and I had so much anxiety because their backup is 45 minutes away. Like, they don't have – their radios have spotty cruiser service. They have spotty portable service, if that's ever working. Their MDTs go down every now and then, so – they have no trackers, no cameras. I'm like, I have no way to know where you are other than your cell phone.
The anxiety I'm just getting from imagining a world where I had to, because it's true. Like, there are a lot of deputy, you know, sheriff situations where I just took a training with a bunch of officers and they're like, yeah, you know, when we're putting out a traffic stop, we kind of, where's my cover? All right, the 30 minutes away. You know, you got to gauge the risk versus the reward, air quotes, type of thing. Like, is it, you know, and I could, like, I'm in a city, so I've never had to, I've had like someone call for cover and we're like 6 minutes away and that feels like forever, you know. I'm just like, oh, the guy can drive faster. And then you to imagine what you folks are dealing with in some of those counties, these long gaps in coverage and the tech going down, and I couldn't do it. My anxiety would be through the roof.
So she, with all of those problems that are just naturally like part of the beast of county, like, she's dealing with that. So, like, I developed something that I still do to this day when I have a question, and I literally pop up almost like, I think of like a meerkat popping out of its hole, popping over the desk and going, dumb question, how do you do that?
Throwing it out the scene, bites like, hey, what's up, guys? Question.
But I mean, luckily enough, the room I was in, the 3 women I was with, all of them had over 20 years experience in the chair. So when I did have that young, dumb question, like, they were like my moms and aunts kind of guiding me through. But it was overwhelming where they're like, okay, you know what to do other than your dumb questions. Like, follow the protocol. Answer the call and follow the protocol. And of course, in that first 2 weeks before I left the academy, I had to read the SOPs and SOGs for my department. So, and that was like 138 pages. And sign off on them. So they're like, you signed off on them, so you know how to do the job here on paper. And you know, you've been to the academy, so here's a desk. Have fun. And I do have to quit, like, or give some accountability to my military service of being able to keep my cool and not like, and okay, I've read my SOPs and SOGs. I kept that book right next to me. So if I ever had, like, I would try to find the answer before I popped up, dumb question, you know, I knew, like, because we use priority dispatch up here in the state of Maine for EMD and EFD. So when those calls come in, you know, yes, I was a robotic dispatcher, but I just read the questions as scripted.
Yeah.
Because
I think you got to do that a little bit, right?
Before you know, I was horrible at, you know, gap theory and calming callers at the beginning because I, you know, that's why I started to watch other shows and like trying to find like, where can I calm callers down? Because that was the one thing on every single review I ever got was you were horrible at calming that caller down. There was too long of gaps. Like, I was like, but I was waiting for the computer to load. As I'm internally freaking out. Like, they're freaking out, but I'm internally freaking out.
And I think it's so important, like, the room, right? Like, just being able to ask the dumb questions as even as someone who's been doing this 4 or 5 years now, I'm sure I still have dumb questions, like, you know, but
yep.
A receptive room, especially with the OGs in the room, is so important because if you meerkat it up and got resistance every time you meerkat it, you'd be like, you know what? Why am I here? You know, like it definitely adds to longevities and making it out of that 6 months to a year aspect of your training because you need support in this job forever, but especially in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, it definitely, like, in the beginning, I took a couple tough calls. Mm. And it definitely, I didn't feel like I could talk to anyone there at work. Mm. And, you know, we'll probably get this into this a little later, but, like, we were offered peer support through the fire department. But whenever I sent an email, like, I wouldn't get an email back. So it felt so actually inaccessible to me.
Yeah.
So, but my access was here at home. Like my mom would, she could tell by the way I put my key in the door. She's like, oh boy. But you know, she being a career volunteer firefighter, she was the first firefighter in her county in Massachusetts in the 80s, first female. Awesome. Like she's been through that struggle of, well, she couldn't talk to the guys. You know, one call that was fine for the guys that she responded with, you know, hit her hard. So my mom really, and my dad were really my rocks during that training process because they were, like I said, my little interior support group. Yeah. If I didn't have them, I definitely wouldn't have made it out.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true. Having any type of built-in support group, like who just kind of get it, or even if they don't get it, they just allow you to talk about it without too much judgment or too many questions. They just kind of somewhere to dump. You know, you got to have that built in a little bit in your environment. And the fact that you had your mom and dad who just got it, I think that's amazing.
Yeah. It definitely says, like, public service is in my blood, I guess.
That sounds like it, hey. Well, let's transition a little bit into peer support. I know it's super important to you. You're using your pageantry to vocalize it, put it out there in front of folks. Let's just talk a little bit about the importance of having peer support available to you as a first responder, as a dispatcher.
Well, there's been a lot of studies, and up here in Maine, our biggest city, Portland, has actually done the most work towards it. And I'm trying to bring what they're doing to smaller agencies or even just around the country. Because their studies alone, before they enacted their interior peer support, and they actually got the city to hire a psychologist for the firefighters and firefighters only. It's not for people that have been affected by fires. It's not for the community. It's not for the police officers. It's for the firefighters to go talk to someone who actually was a career firefighter himself before becoming a psychologist. Mm. So he gets it.
Yeah.
Before that, their retention rate was dropping at like 75%, people just getting out, substance abuse, sick time abuse, you know, all of that. And just the morale in the department itself was so low that people were miserable to work there.
Yeah.
And they first brought in a interior peer support group, and there's one in every fire station. And then there's, I think they're trying to get like one peer support advocate at least every shift. Hmm. But just that alone, being able to, after, now you have your critical call debriefs, but having that peer support for, hey, it's still bugging me, you know, or this call that we're not doing a critical call debrief on, it's hitting me hard because a kid was involved in that accident, the same age, same gender as my kid, you know, and that's where it hits a lot of people. You know, being a child of a firefighter, I've been that child where my dad came home one night when I was about 16 and he said, "You're never getting your license. You're never driving a car. You're never having friends over like in your car." Mind you, I didn't get my license until I was 18, but still, like, because he went to a car accident where three girls, about 16, 15, and 17, were driving on an icy road and they wrapped themselves around a tree. And because they weren't paying attention to the roadway, it was already dangerous. And the officers did find that they were texting and driving. And one of the youngest one, the 15-year-old, died on impact. And I can't remember because it's been so long now, like, what happened to the other two, but the fact that my dad came home after that shift and he was so filled with rage at this situation and he didn't talk to anyone about it. So he kind of took it out on me, but then he held me for so long that it made me uncomfortable. And I'm like, "Mom, do something." Like, "Mom, I'm not, I'm not a like touchy feely person anyway. Like if I give you a hug, it's like really serious." And so like, I was like, "Okay, Dad, you filled my physical touch quota for the week." But, and I never understood that when that happened. And then a call like that happened to me. And that I was just, right afterwards, I did go to the gym and I was just slamming weights because I was so angry at the situation. And now I was like, "I need to talk." Like, I was like, "I need to talk about this before I start doing something super unhealthy," whether that be excessively in the gym like that, always angry, or, you know, one of my crutches, especially in the early starts of my career, was wine. I'd come home and I'd pour myself a glass of wine. Or I'll even admit that I drank a whole bottle without thinking. And then I would reach for another bottle and then be like, "Wait, that's not healthy." You know, some of the, and it's just because I wanted to silence that anger. I wanted to silence that sadness I had for those people. Or there's one call that I heard a guy kill himself. And I just wanted to silence that happening over on repeat in my head. And the only way I could, well, I was doing it was with a bottle of wine because I'd go right to bed. Then I got introduced to what peer support is when I moved to the Kittery Police Department. And one of our detectives, whose office is literally right outside the dispatch center, you know, he is our peer support advocate. Before I got trained to be a peer support advocate, and just him hearing a call, him in his office doing his detective thing, and then hear him, at least just my end of the call, and what was going out over the radio comes in and goes, are you okay? Do you need to talk about it?" I've had a call like that. Like, just hearing that, like having that support, literally him just making a cup of coffee in the Keurig behind me and casually talking to me about it. It made such a world of difference that I do have to acquit that it, you know, that support from my admin too, from, you know, the peer support advocate, just the guys in general, because we are a one-man dispatch center. So I am alone in there when I don't have a trainee. And I take a bad call and they come back. Like, even if it's not like a bad call, but it's just, you know, higher stress call and all that. Or even if it's a call that I'm like, "What the hell happened, guys?" Like, just them even coming in and being like, "You did great. Do you need to talk about it? Or do you need a break?" You know, there's different calls that some of them I'm like, "Leave me alone. Let me process my feelings. Let me process my thoughts. I don't want to see you." And they go, "Okay." And they walk back out to patrol. Some of them I'm like, "I need someone in here. I need," or even like, "I need a break." And they'll sit down on the dispatch desk. You know, they'll have me MDT because we dispatch for two towns. Like, put it out on the MDTs to everyone else. Like, "Don't bug dispatch. Cindy's not in here. Cindy left. It's Ben."
You know what? Just turn their emergency beeper on. We're just going to clear the air. No one do nothing for a while. Cindy's taking a break.
But they let me do that. And that, to me, like, just, like I said, even having Ryan come in and just be like, "Are you okay?" Like, just having that in the first moment was eye-opening, because every time, like I said before, I, you know, sent emails or I didn't feel like I could tell the people that I wasn't okay. At my other agency, I was like, and that's when I started like studying peer support and what it is, and just learning about like agencies that have peer support groups, whether it's just one person or there's multiple people throughout the department, like, that are accessible to text or whatever and say, hey, I'm not okay because of this call. A, it's someone that you can talk to the call about, because even if you get your own therapist, you can't, there's certain things that we're bound by law that we can't tell them. So if it's someone in your own agency, you can talk in depth about that call.
Yeah.
You can talk in depth at, you know, it's hitting you because it's a frequent flyer in town. Mm-hmm. You know, you can talk about all that stuff and getting, you know, not the touchy-feely part of it, but like being able to talk about it, talking about how, like, just your part of the call went versus the whole outcome of the call. Like, it really does matter. And feeling that support versus just being told, oh, 911's ringing, pick up the next line.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, I've had the two deep, deep ends of the spectrum. You know, I did have a call where, you know, it was critical. It's the one that the gentleman killed himself on the phone with me. I did everything I could to try to keep him on that line as long, like, the officers were just getting there. And then I'm hearing Force on the radio with what they're seeing when they're pulling up. The line's gone dead. Like, and 911's ringing and I'm in the call. Like, I was like, it was my turn to pick up the next 911. I was like, the supervisor's like, you gonna pick that up? Like, yeah. Okay, on to the next. Instead of being like, oh my God, I just heard this happen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a couple of years down the road, right before I left, I had one supervisor. I took a call and it was hitting me hard, but I was just, the way I was feeling, the way my brain was working was, I need to be here on the desk. I need to do my job because that is what's going to get me through the rest of the shift. If I leave, then I have to leave for the rest of the shift. Like, I'm not, and I still had a couple hours left, but the supervisor that I had told me to leave for 30 minutes or be written up for insubordination for not following our order. And I tried telling her, I'm like, no, I need to be here. I need to do my job. You know, like, this is what I mentally need right now. But it, like, my perception of the whole situation between me and her was she didn't care about my feelings. Yeah. She just cared about her perception of, well, her, she didn't give her dispatcher a break after a critical call.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, going, okay, my dispatcher is telling me what she needs. Mm-hmm. And I need to be that leader that listens to her. If she's telling me she needs a break, I give it to her. Exactly. If she's telling me she needs to stay and work through it, then I listen to her. Like, and right now I'm in a position, it's me and one other person in Kittery going for our lead position. And like, I keep that so near and dear, especially when I'm training, of mm-hmm. I'm going to listen to my trainees. If they say I need a break, okay, I got you. Go get a break. Because mm-hmm. we're not fortunate enough that when we're on shift alone, you know, yeah, the officers might give us a break, but you know, when they're in training, I give them that support. And that's how we don't lose trainees. Because I've seen agencies lose trainees left and right in the training process. Mm-hmm. Just because they're not forced, like, they don't get that support from their trainers. They don't get that support from the room, mm-hmm. you know, and this is already a hard job that not everyone can do.
Ain't that the
truth? Now, if you add the cattiness and the bullying that happened, you know, when I first started, one of the women that was in the room, she even told me, she's like, the only reason I know your name is because you have the same name as your trainer. We are both Cindy. She goes, normally I don't even bother learning trainees' names until after they clear probation, yeah. which our training was 6 months, our probation was 1 year.
Yeah.
She goes, at that point, you're a dispatcher to me.
Like, okay.
I was like, that's some old school feelings, but okay.
Right? Like, that is such a pet peeve for me because, I mean, when we think about peer support, the biggest word in that title is support, right? And mm-hmm. all we are really looking for as people doing this job is support. It's support mm-hmm. from our leadership, you know, support from our peers, support from our trainers. And when we fail, when they fail to do that, simply support us, and of course within reason, I mean, supervisors of course has policies to enforce and things to do in those realms, of course do that. But if I'm here saying I need XYZ mm-hmm. and you have the ability to make XYZ happen, make it happen. If you're a supervisor and your people are telling you they need those things, if you can't instantly get it for them, just show them that you're working on providing whatever the thing is, right? Because at the end of the day, and that's kind of like you said, I believe you said their name was Ryan, would come in and just kind of say say a couple words to you. And it's just support. You just, you feel heard. You feel validated. You know, like this got me feeling a type of way. And I'm not sure if I should be feeling that type of way. And if someone comes in and they validate your experience, like, you good? Like, that sounded like it was rough. I feel like weight kind of just starts to drain off of us. Like, okay, I'm not tripping. Like, I'm allowed to feel these feelings, and someone else is seeing that it bothered me, and they're validating my experience. And I think that's kind of the biggest part of that's all we're really looking for. Just like our callers, we just want to be heard, right? And supported in some way, shape, or form. And
I'm so lucky being in Maine. It's one of the states that we are recognized by the state government by law as first responders. So we have protections. And it frustrates me that I'm part of like these dispatch groups on Facebook. And it's like, they're like, yeah, we're fighting for this. We're fighting for this. And I'm like, you are first responders. Like, don't give up the fight, because honestly, like when I see that people are like leaving because of PTSD, like one of the states that doesn't is our neighboring state, New Hampshire. And we had a dispatcher that I know that she moved to Maine, like she came to a Maine agency, and luckily enough, she was able to get some workers' comp because of being a Maine certified dispatcher. She was seen as a first responder, so she got workman's comp for PTSD after a call. If she had been a dispatcher in New Hampshire, she would not have gotten that protection. And she would not have been able to get workman's compensation for her time off while she seeked treatment and got herself back on her feet. You know, she did have to leave the industry of dispatching altogether. And I think she stayed in public safety from what I've heard, but you know, she's now just like a clerk instead of a 911 dispatcher. But like, it shakes me to my core that A, there's not peer support groups everywhere. Peer support isn't accessible to everyone. That the rising rate of just dispatch alone, suicide and alcohol, just alcohol related, never mind the other drugs that are out there and more accessible in places like where you are. I mean, and they're not accessible here too, but it's like, it blows my mind that, you know, I read a article about just New York City. New York City PD statistically has roughly about 50 OUIs of their officers alone every month. 50, like, you got to think NYPD is probably one of the biggest police departments in this nation. And 50 of them are drinking. Yet when they're asked, why are you drinking and driving? You know better. It's not because they think they're above the law. They're like, because that call last month there, Cap. I have no one to talk to. The, you know, the few psychiatrists that they have for the department, like, they're all booked up. Like, and they don't have, I reach out. I'm like, do you guys have a peer support team? And they're like, not one that like that you're describing of. I mean, we all go out to the bar and we all talk about it. And I'm like, we'll take the bar part out of it.
And it's so true. And I think for folks who are listening who are not really in the dispatch world, you know, not every state, as you said, recognizes dispatchers as first responders. California, we passed it a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. Like you said, Maine is one of them that does recognize it, but there are many, 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 many states that are still fighting for that recognition. And as you said, that recognition provides certain supports for things that we can get from doing the line of work that we do. So definitely check your local government, your local dispatch groups, because if you are not currently recognized as a first responder, there is so many folks who are out there on the front lines fighting for that right, that acknowledgement, I should say. And it's such an important thing.
Oh yeah. We like, I laugh. I don't know if you've ever really experienced it, but my guys come in and they're like, yeah, I can't do this job. Your job is way harder than being a police officer.
They'll come in and they're talking to me and I'm like pointing to the red light. I'm like, I'm on the phone. I don't know what you're saying right now. Like, and I transferred to the current agency I'm at from a larger agency, And I remember being at my larger agency and calling CHP, our highway patrol, and they'd be like, hold on, I got to go out. And I hear them working my phone call, working a radio, and whatever the heck else they were doing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I could never work both the radio and call. Like, it sounds terrible now.
Oh, that's what I do on a daily basis.
And they were like, yeah, it's you and this other person in the room. And sometimes if it gets popping, it's you and this other person in the room and you're doing both, you know, you're doing the whole thing. So I definitely have learned to dispatch differently, I guess, because it is a specific superpower to be able to do all those things at the same time.
That was my fear, going from like a 5-person on the floor to me and me. Like, I was used to a structure fire. Like, I'd have 4 other people. Like, if I was on the fire desk, I was working it, I was hopping and popping, but I had that support, at least with the call. I had someone else calling mutual aid for me. I had someone else telling police officers to stay off my air. Like, there was so much moving parts, and now it's like, I have to do it all.
Yeah.
You know, there, my very first day shift at Kittery Police, I will never forget. Like, I was cleared for about 2 months after, like, 4 weeks of in-house training, since I was already a certified dispatcher. You know, just that little, this is how we do it versus how you used to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's my very first day shift, and we have a horrible, horrible tropical storm move in. Wires down, trees down, flooding in the road, everything. I have radios went down because our radio tower got struck with lightning.
Oh my God.
So I'm using a portable. Dispatch didn't even have a portable at the time. So I'm using the lieutenant's personal portable with the lieutenant in there, the chief secretary who used to be a dispatcher and has like our CAD rights and everything. Like, she's answering business line calls, trying to, like, writing them down on sticky notes, trying to help me. Yeah. I had over 79 calls for service on the board.
Wow.
And I'm working on a portable, and like, I'm taking another one. The guys are asking me, like, you know, where's the next tree down so I can go to it. Yeah. And I have since I'm on a portable and I don't have my actual radios, we have everyone, the fire, EMS, and police all on one channel, so I can talk to them on one channel. And I had to break, clear the air. I have a domestic with threats of homicide. Like, and they're like, wait, what's going on? I'm like, yeah, other stuff is happening other than the storm guys. I just,
oh my God.
It definitely like put me in that heightened, like, I am so glad that almost that I was thrown to the wolves, because I was able to take control of that situation. But I literally, after every, like, the calm after the storm, I looked at the lieutenant and I'm like, never again.
Here's my 2-week notice. I'm quite over this.
But I loved that as soon as they realized I was hopping and popping, like, and it was luckily it was day shift, so they were there and someone was in there helping me. But it really was a culture shock just to come to a smaller agency.
I'm still adjusting, and it's like a year and a half later. There's still some days I'm like, we need more people. I don't know.
Oh yeah. My elementary school best friend actually just cleared training. I finally talked her into becoming a dispatcher. And so now she's cleared. She cleared last week, and we have 2 more trainees. And I, like, every time people are like, how's it going? I'm like, I can't wait for them to clear. Because when we have all 6 of us, we'll have 2 of us on. So it will be like, oh, another person.
You're like, you start doing things that you used to do when you were by yourself, and your partner's like, dude, what are you doing? Oh, forgot you were here. I'm used to being alone.
I'm excited that I can go pee without having to send out to all units on the MDT. I'm stepping away from the console. I'll have a portable with me, grabbing the portable and having to go pee.
It's funny. My one of my supervisors the other day, she was like, she was telling me like a story that she had an open mic like a long time ago. The open mic was, hey, can you listen while I pee? And it went out over the air, and then everyone was like, what is going on up there? And it's like, it's a normal ask, because, you know, you have to step away. They have to be aware. But like, to the world, they were like, who's listening to who pee? And you're like, no, I have to use the restroom.
I need someone to cover my radio.
Yeah. But it is a reality in these smaller centers, like, especially the one, like, I don't know how you've done it. The anxiety I would have just knowing what, at some point I'm going to have to pee. let alone do the other thing. So, you know, I can't imagine having to.
And you have to be like, look at the clock and realize what kind of time of day it is, what day of the week it is. Like, what is, like, you do a lot of statistical math trying to figure out, is a 911 call going to come in?
See, I would be terrible at that. I'm terrible at math. I had to put on my backgrounds. I cheated through accounting and I told my accounting teacher about it too. Nope, I'm terrible at math. So I'd be horrible.
So definitely we're glad that we're going to be fully staffed here soon. So
that's awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about, for the folks who don't have a peer support team, kind of what your suggestions are, how to get that going, kind of what steps they could take to implement that into their everyday life at work.
Of course, the biggest thing is probably doing a blanket email to admin saying that you're interested in, like, if you're interested in it and you want to be a peer support advocate, best thing you can do is tell your admin, hey, I'm interested in this. Is this something that we can do? Because you never want to start a special interest group or anything outside of admin's blessing. But there is a free course on the National First Responders Fund website. If you scroll down to their trainings, there is a free 1 hour, like, intro beginner. This is how you become a peer support advocate. And kind of like it goes over what you talk about when you're in a peer support session one-on-one with people, what words you do use, what words you don't, what to look for, of if it's something more than peer support that you need to, you know, either gently tell them, hey, I can't handle this situation. Like, we need to look for someone more qualified. And then they do Zoom classes throughout the year. I haven't seen any recently, but that I work with them. I am, Operation Enduring Warrior Community Ambassador, but I also do a lot of ambassador work for the National First Responders Fund, which also, if you are looking to start a peer support group, you can send them an email, and that's what they do. They take donations and everything so that they can send someone out to train peer support advocates around the country and bring peer support to all first responders. And to them, dispatchers are first responders, whether your state recognizes you or not. So you can always reach out and say, hey, I'm looking to have three of us trained for our agency. And whether that's, you know, one dispatcher, a police officer, and a firefighter, like, our town is looking for this so that, you know, yeah, everyone has critical debriefs, but like I said, not all calls are going to need a critical debrief with everyone involved, but it still could hit someone really hard. Yeah. You know, for me, one of the really hard calls that stuck with me to the point that I did need therapy was, I myself am a domestic violence survivor, and I took a very bad domestic violence call. Most of them never bothered me. This one, the mom was actually doing text to 911 in a closet with her 3-year-old because her husband had loaded guns and was trying to kill her. Yeah. She actually called first and was whispering, but I couldn't hear her. And so finally I knew us here in Maine, we have next gen system. So we have text to 911, and I told her to hang up and text me. So that he wouldn't hear. I'm like, silence your phone so he won't hear me texting you back.
Yeah.
But he's not going to hear you guys talking.
Yeah.
And being able to use that resource saved her life. We got him arrested. You know, we got them out and into a domestic violence shelter locally. Mm. Like, but that call, it wasn't a critical debrief for everyone. It wasn't a standoff. It wasn't, you know, SRT or SWAT being called out. It wasn't a fatal fire. It wasn't any of those big ones. But it hit me, A, because of my life experiences, and B, because I was making that deep, deep connection with her in a very scary moment for her and her daughter. And, you know, yeah, it was kind of like one of the officers said that it was a little bit rough on him because he has a 3-year-old at home too. But he's like, it didn't hit me the way it hit you. Like, to me, it actually did trigger full-on PTSD with anger, with alcohol, with nightmares, with I wake up in the middle of the night screaming. And luckily enough, I do live here at home with my parents, so it's like my mom would be able to come in, calm me down. You know, I've had PTSD throughout the Army and everything, so like, we know how to maneuver it when I do have an attack. But, you know, if I had peer support and a peer support team after that call, I think the outcome of my mental health in the months afterwards would have came out way differently. And that's why I've teamed up with the National First Responders Fund, knowing what they do and becoming a peer support advocate myself, so that when, say, someone, you know, you actually, if we were working together, we're working in the same agency but different shifts, you took that one call that you're like, that reminds me of my nephew or my niece or whatever, it hits you, but it doesn't hit anyone else in the department. Okay, let's talk about it. Yeah. Let's grab a cup of coffee in the break room. Or, you know, if we meet up on, I perfectly have done it on days off, like, let's go meet at Dunk's. Mm-hmm. I'll pay for your coffee and let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And we are removing ourselves from the like, I love doing that because it removes you from the dispatch center, removes you from other sounds of stress.
Yeah.
And we can really process what's going on, and being able to process like how you handled the call, how you validate your feelings, mm-hmm. you know. And I always ask the people that I'm talking with, like, are you looking for solutions or, you know, feedback, or do you just want me to hear you? Because if you were looking for solutions and feedback, then yeah, I could have done this differently, or nope, I would have done it the same way as you. Mm-hmm. But if they're looking just to talk, then just the, I totally get that.
Yeah.
Like, can be a very therapeutic, like, just talking to a coworker about something that you both would have faced, mm-hmm. and going, I got you six. Like, sometimes that's the biggest thing that I've ever heard is, you know, I got you six.
Mm-hmm.
You know, recently I had what really solidified my want to be a peer support advocate and my force into my pageantry with that was we took a swatting call up here at my local high school, which is also where my 15-year-old sister is a freshman. Mm. I had just gotten off a midnight shift and we heard sirens blasting by the house. And my mom goes, what the hell's going on? And I look at my phone, and being part of the tactical dispatch response team, I noticed, I'm like, there's a shooting at the high school. And I loaded up my car. My brother, who's military, we loaded up and we went down. Luckily enough for me, I was able to show my badge and get on scene.
Yeah.
But afterwards, the aftermath, the fact that I had Ryan and peer support of, you were there. Mm-hmm. You also had your sister there. Like, you good? Let's talk about it. Nope. You did amazing in your response, you know. And luckily enough, it was a hoax.
Yeah.
And everyone was safe. And we, all of us learned from it. All of us learned from it. Mm-hmm. Everyone that responded.
Yeah.
So, you know, but the fact that I was able to meet with Ryan off the books in, you know, it was in the dispatch center, but we talked about it.
Yeah.
And I talked about it with the lieutenant and the chief, because they were even on board with, like, you know, being administrative support. You know, kind of taking that peer out of it, because they are above me, but them being like, are you good? What do you want? Like, what do you need? And I was like, I need us to change these X, Y, and Z policies. I need this in the dispatch center. Like, I went in full on, like, not if, but when it happens in our tiny little coastal town.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely the trend, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
especially in a dispatch center, I think that type of call is one of those not if, but when. And I think something important that you brought up is, like, the reason calls hit differently for different folks is because we're humans, right? We're bringing all of our own stuff with us to these shifts, and your life experience is going to be different than my life experience. So, like you said, that DV call is going to hit you differently than maybe someone else in that center or someone else on that call. Mm-hmm. So I think we as a community, as dispatcher, have to realize when we're sitting in the room with someone else, we don't know our partner's full story. We don't know, because I think we can get a little dark humor. We can pop off a little bit, and, like, that's a coping mechanism as well. But I do think that we really need to be aware that we don't know everyone's full story and the things that they've lived through and experienced. And
I've seen it with training people that, like, just for me, a standard stroke diagnostic call, you know, getting them sent off and everything. Like, I'm like, that's another day at the office.
That's right. Yeah.
But I've seen someone literally, like, if it's anything to do with stroke, because their dad had a stroke, it heightens that. And I'm like, okay, like, do you need to take a lap? Do you need a sip of water? Like, I give them that support. Because I know, like, after the first time I saw them freak out, I asked, like, whoa.
Yeah.
I even did the, like, it's just a stroke. You're fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were like, it's not fine because I lost my dad to a stroke. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, thank you for letting me know. Now I'm, like, a few times, like, my old agency, you could barge into calls. Like, the one time I took my little sister's 911 call. Mm. She has an autoimmune disease. And my mom called because she was coughing up blood. Literally, I was had been on, like, just logged in maybe 10 minutes. And it was the first call I took of the day. Sheesh. And I did the standard 911 was the address of the emergency. And I heard my own address. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
What's the phone number you're calling me from? Well, I already knew it was my mom's number. Like, by the time, like, I had picked up the phone mindlessly. It was still, like, fiddling with my coffee. And then I heard the address. And I looked up at the screen. I was like,
ooh. Yeah.
I did hear that right. You know, and for me, like, I was shaking because it's my sister. But, you know, when my mom's like, she's coughing up 100 cc's of blood, we need, you know, transport to the hospital. In the, like, in the moment, it's an adrenaline rush because I was not expecting it. Mm-hmm. And luckily enough, one of my coworkers, she saw the address go into the CAD. And she literally, she popped over next to me and she goes, do you need me to barge in? I will take your call for you. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was like, no, no, I'm good. Let me, you know, finish the call, got the ambulance started that way. Mm. Of course, the ambulance crew, we were like, wait, isn't that, that says Utgard Resonance, isn't that your, and I'm like, yes, yes, it is. That's so
move.
Move with a purpose. You know, luckily enough, it's just, my mom, even when I came home, she's like, I almost wanted to tell you, even though I knew it was recorded line, to breathe. Because I was probably holding my breath the whole time, but it's something that we're used to. Like, yeah. If it were to happen while I was here, mm-hmm. I'd just be like, okay.
Yeah.
Because it's been something that she's lived with her whole life.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? But when you're not expecting it, it's like, oh, my God.
And you don't know what's happened yet. And then, you know, there's a lot of, it's a roller coaster, right? It's like that experience. You just hear it. You're like, oh, my gosh. Okay, all right, well, this is normal for us, and, you know. And
but then having that coworker, that support of, hey, do you need me to barge in and take over? Because I can do that right now.
Yeah.
And, of course, that, you know, me being stubborn, I was like, probably my mom likes hearing my own voice when she's dialing 911, being like, okay, it's my daughter, we're good.
Start the ambulance.
But, like, that was one of my first times at my old agency that I, like, and that was closer to me leaving, that mm-hmm. I had support on the floor like that mm-hmm. of, mm-hmm. we know this is a Cindy-specific high-stress call.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it takes knowing your coworkers and having that peer support of knowing, oh, that's so-and-so's address.
Yes.
And so-and-so's taking that call. Like, should we take, like, ask first, of course. Don't just barge in.
Yeah.
Because that can cause drama on the floor altogether of why'd you take my call?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the only person that should ever barge in without asking is a supervisor in my mind.
Yes.
And that's because the supervisor is seeing something so wrong. But, you know, and then again, the, like I said before, like even my dad, none of the other firefighters, when it came to that crash, like, yeah, they were shaken. It was a fatal accident. They did their debrief, but it hit my dad a lot harder because he had a 16-year-old daughter at home.
Yeah.
That was in driver's ed, learning how to drive, who loves having her friends around. So he didn't see, you know, girl A, B, and C in the car. He saw Cindy, Brooke, and, you know, Allie in the car.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he saw these, his daughter and these two girls that are practically lived at the house.
Yeah, seriously.
So now I see that all the time, like, doesn't matter what type of call it is. It could be something that to me is an everyday, okay, whatever. And to the dispatcher next to me or even the officer on the road, it could be, you know, the worst call they've had in their career. That's why peer support is so important. And like I said, anyone that's interested, you can take the free 1 hour online class for the National First Responders Fund. It's kind of more like a Zoom. They talk at you. There's no test or anything at the end.
Yeah.
And then reaching out to National First Responders Fund if you guys don't have funds to actually get more training on it and keep up to date on, you know, what to do when your own coworkers are in crisis. You got to think, you know, the officers and the dispatchers to the left and right of us, like, if they say, I need help, like, we're doing everything to move heaven and earth to get to them. Mm-hmm. But what about when they're in crisis and they're not screaming, I need help on a radio? But they're acting just a little off than their new normal self. They're more quiet or they're more talkative. Mm-hmm. Like, you're noticing that. And that's what peer support is moving heaven and earth to stop the internal crisis.
So true. And the National First Responders Fund, I think that's such an awesome resource. And I hope I'm going to throw it at my peer support team. I don't know if they're aware of it. I hope they're aware of it. But just the access to the free Zoom class, right? Like, so even if you're not on a full-fledged peer support team, you are still in some way providing peer support to the folks you are working with. So even if you are not on a peer support team, check out the free course. You know what I mean? Watch it. It's going to provide tools to your tool belt. And yes, of course, send that. I'm going to check in with our peer support team and see if they have access to it. Because more training, the better. More knowledge, the better. And if I could take a free course that's virtual that I could hop on whenever I have my free time, then potentially support, you know, one of my coworkers in the future. I mean, it's phenomenal having that access. So I definitely appreciate you sharing this resource, and I'm going to add it to a resource page on my website, because there's so many different resources out there that I just think you're not aware of until you have to be.
Mm-hmm.
You can have that preventative type of care knowledge and information bank for dispatchers out there. It's only going to help more in the future.
Yeah. No, that is one of the big ones. And then also American Emergency Preparedness is who we use a lot of our trainings through. And they actually have some like peer support, PTSD treatment type classes. One of their classes, they actually bring in, like, the first day it's all dispatchers. And then the second day they actually have you bring in your family members so that they can see the family side, like the outside of the work side of it and all of that. So there's plenty. That one, like I said, American Emergency Preparedness or can't remember their full website name, but they took over PSTC when they got absorbed earlier this year. So they have amazing classes they're doing online. And the 2-minute, they're bringing back the 2-minute trainings, and they're going to include a lot of that stuff too in those 2-minute trainings. Cause I've talked to their CEO about it because of, you know, my pageantry. I'm like reaching out to whoever I can, like, hey, how can we make this even training about peer support or just knowing, you know, what to do for your own self, your own support in these situations? Like, I have my trainees laugh at me because I have a drawer. Like, we have drawers and cubbies, and one of my drawers is filled with fidget toys and coloring books. Because in the downtime after a stressful call, I have a Minnie Mouse, you know, pop it, and I will grab it, and I'll hand it to them, and I'm like, give your hand something to do. You know, we have a stair stepper and a walking pad. They'll see me after a stressful call or even during a stressful call, quickly whip it out while I'm still on the phone, like, doing CPR. I'm on the, you know, stair stepper, and I'm doing 120 beats per minute with my feet. Because it's bringing my own heart rate down as I'm from the adrenaline. It's keeping my own heart rate at that 120 beats per minute.
Yeah.
Versus my heart rate skyrocketing because we just got this adrenaline dump when you hear, my husband's not breathing. Oh my God, he's dead. Like, boom.
Yeah.
And that's nothing we can control. Mm-hmm. But we can control how we react to our body's actions.
Exactly.
And I learned that through these courses. And, you know, sharing that peer support of, yes, sometimes it's talking about it and having a cup of coffee, but sometimes it's being like, hey, go in my drawer. I got fidget toys.
And snackies. We like snackies.
Yes. We're working on the snackies thing through our union. So I do have a BJ's and a Sam's Club membership. So like a Costco membership. So if I could get the union credit card to go get the snackies.
Right. Yeah. Ask first. Let's see what they give us, you know?
Exactly.
Well, as we wrap it up and we come to a close, I'm going to give you the question I tend to end with most folks who come onto my show, which is, what advice would you give someone considering a career in dispatch?
I would give them the advice to be attentive and compassionate. If attention to detail is huge, at least where in my area, my 4 years of experience, you know, and it's, you know, one of the things that I learned in the Army is communication kills. Too much kills and too little kills at the same time. And that attention to all details, not just what the caller's telling you, but also, you know, what's in the background. Attention to even just how your officers are acting. Is it the officer that normally comes in and says, hi, it's in the morning, but you haven't seen him all day? Like, okay, what's going on? You know, that, you know, or just your coworker next to you, like they're a little more talkative or a little less talkative. Just be attentive to everything around you, because there's a lot of subtle things that will give you hints to if someone's in crisis or what's actually going on scene that someone's not telling you. And then be compassionate. Be compassionate towards your officers and your responders. Be compassionate towards your callers. They might be calling you out of their mind because of a parking ticket, and you're going, this isn't an emergency. Like, this goes to the parking authority. Like, why are you calling me? But you still need to be compassionate, because there might be something else going on that has now triggered them to call you. Yeah. Or, you know, like I said, being compassionate towards your officers that, you know, they might be having a bad day. Yeah, you sent them on the call and they might take it out on you a little bit, but, you know, you don't know how that call treated them. You know, they just might be having a bad day because they woke up and, you know, their wife yelled at them for not taking out the trash, you know, or, you know, one of, you know, they have a new baby. If they have a new baby at home, they're not getting sleep. Like, just, and they're now getting snappy on you at the radio. Well, it's not towards you. It's because they're sleep deprived and you've now sent them on 5 report calls. And they're like, now I'm not going to get home before the baby gets home from daycare, so I can't get a nap. Mm-hmm. You know, so just be compassionate towards every aspect of life. You know, everyone that you interact with on the phone, in person, you know, I love the shirts that say you don't know what everyone's going through. Mm-hmm. So just be kind, even if it's, you know, hey, I'll give you my debit card and you can get a coffee if you get me one. You know, that might make the officer's day. That might make your coworker's day of, okay, yeah, you need a break. Hey, here's my debit card. Coffee's on me. You take your break and go get it for us. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the biggest things, is pay attention to every little thing that you can and just show as much compassion as you can.
Amazing. Cindy, thank you so much for your service, for your continued service, and your advocating for peer support. We definitely need it. We need more dispatchers, but we need happy and healthy dispatchers and first responders. So thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's needed and it's appreciated.
Thank you so much.
All right. I'll be right back with you.
Okay.
All right, everybody. That was another amazing episode of Let's Talk Dispatch. Again, truly, Cindy, thank you so much for what you're out there doing, what you're out there advocating for, dropping some gems here for free resources and continued education in the peer support realm, National First Responders Fund, American Emergency Preparedness as well. I'm going to have those links and that information in the description of this video for folks to go access later. And like I said, Cindy brought in that there's a free course dedicated to peer support on the National First Responders Fund page. And whenever you get these chances to go to these trainings, access these trainings online for free, I do encourage you to do so, because there's never too much tools in your tool belt. So continue to learn and add to your information so you can continue to provide support to yourself and to others in this line of work. As always, thank you so much for the support. Make sure to hit that subscribe button. Follow us on the socials. Hit me up if you need me. And I look forward to connecting with you all next week. Until next time, stay raspy. Thanks for joining us here on Let's Talk Dispatch. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a 5-star review. Consider joining our Patreon for exclusive content, early access to episodes, and discounts on merch at theraspydispatcher.com. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. All of these things help support the creation of more content, because the world needs more dispatchers. Thank you all again for the love and continued support, and until next time, stay raspy.